Artorama Podcast.
Hi, Sveva. Thank you very much for your time in doing this Artorama Podcast.
Hi, Thiago. So happy to be part of it. And I really thanks Artorama for this amazing project.
Nice. So let's begin. So you started collecting because of family influence, right? More specifically, the father of your husband started to collect in the 70s the Transvanguardia that came from Naples, the region he lived in. So to collect them was natural from a geographical standpoint. How was it? What did you learn from him, and how did he influence you too?
Collezione Taurisano is a family collection. So the father of my husband started to collect in the late 70s, more or less, and artists of the territory. For him, it was natural to remain inside the border of our region, keeping alive the tradition and the history of our territory. We learned from him that we do not have to be ashamed of being part of a tradition. In fact, most likely, it's impossible to not belong to a tradition. The artists of the 70s we have in our collection were all artists active in the political sphere of that time. They were complaining against or supporting the current status quo of that society. So they were like interpreting a crucial time of our history, giving us well a vision of what could have been the future. So having these works in front of us every day made us believe that art, whatever else it may be, is exclusively political. What is called for is the analysis of format and cultural limits within which art exists and struggles. These limits are many and of different intensities. Although the prevailing ideology and the associated artists tried in every way to camouflage them, and although it was too early to blow them up, the time came to unveil them. So actually, we learned from Paolo, the father of my husband, that art is vision, art is engagement, is the zeitgeist of our time. Collecting for us means create a new vocabulary of our era, reactivate our language deeply, be conscious of what we're living, and try to change what needs to be changed. That's what we learned from him, and his attitude of faith and full trust on the artist guided us throughout our adventure in the art world. So artist is always at the center. That's it.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I just remembered you told me that collecting is a memory of an emotion, of an encounter. It is an act of love that you collect with your hearts. And that is to say that this act is a sort of encounter between you and your husband and art, right?
It's totally like this. So when me and my husband met more than 10 years ago, our first appointment was at the Museum Exhibition of Photography in Naples, our hometown. So from the beginning, it was clear that art would have been our shared passion, our baby, our main late night discussion, our life. We research works that makes us emotional, that give us joy or sadness, that punch us in the face, that shake us. We ask to the work of art to give us an alternative point of view on a topic, on a person, on a specific situation. We want to dream through art. We want to escape reality because it's too difficult to think about changes if you remain inside the box. Once you are somewhere else in this outer world, you see better what's going on our earth. You have a clearer perspective of what needs to be changed. You can stop dreaming at that point and start doing something now in your society. We like to be an active collector's couple. We do not want to accumulate objects, but we'd rather collect experiences, productive and challenging encounters. That's why we try to be involved in the process of the making of an artwork, feeling the commitment of the artistic practice since the beginning of it. You cannot love your child if it's already an adult. You need to follow your kids since they are born, fed them, see them grow, help them in hard times. Be there all time for our artists. That's our philosophy. Be present, meet them, create the possibility of encounter to fulfill our life of collectors and human beings.
And you collect a kind of contemporary art that deals with what's going on right now. It has to reveal something that is hidden in our society. Challenge your way to see the world. Could you tell me about these artists, about the different movements of the collection? There were a group of artists, activists in the beginning, nowadays more paintings, less photography. Tell me more about it.
We started to collect artists that are not afraid of losing their aura of eternity, reflecting about current issues of our society. We wanted to collect artists of our generation, living artists, with a strong commitment to unveil uncomfortable stories of our era. We're talking about artists like Jono Stahl, Clara Janni, Claire Fontaine, Marinella Senatore, Jota Castro, Opa Vivara, and many others who were actively spreading through their work a political message of pushing us to exit from our comfort zone and understand what's happening all around us and actively react to it. These works, from one side, were revealing the other side of the story, the hidden one, what usually media do not tell us. So they were kind of informative works. From the other side, they were already engaging us to a reaction. They were suggesting a way to stand up and fight against injustice all over the world. There is no geographic boundaries in these works. Every fight can be done no matter where you are. All the limits can be overcome for the sake of democracy and civil rights. These type of works make a collection special, shape its identity strongly. That's what we are, where we started from. Of course, a collection represents moments of our life. When we started, we felt the heritage of Francesco's father, my husband, and we continued somehow with the same narrative. Now, after more than 10 years, all the activities we are doing to support artists, we continue to follow our heart and what our eyes like the most. We buy what we like, and all art is political. There is no hierarchy in the choice of a medium. Paintings are part of our collection alongside photography and all different types of installation. Every 6 months, we try to rehang works in our home in Naples so we can do a rotation of the works we have in our collection. Now, I have in my bedroom a wonderful painting by Joshua Miller. A painting is like an aquarium of traces, looping but rogue at the same time. Maybe it has a lot to do with empathy. Empathy determines our degree of happiness and the feeling comes easily when our mind joins with our body. It's such a soft sadness, it's beauty. A painting holds all these feelings you have, but don't really talk about much. It's about embodying that flat image, the imagined real space that's inside without ever being there.
Beautiful, and how the concept of invisibility plays in your collection?
Jasper Johns said, it's already a lot to see something clearly because we do not see anything clearly. So invisibility has become something more interesting than visibility nowadays. We are all obsessed by visibility, that at the end, we see nothing with our full attention. So invisible is the narrative that all the works that are in our collection produce once displayed altogether. Invisible are the feelings linked to the works and all the stories behind them. Invisible is the listening of voices that are usually unheard by the majority of people. Invisibility is the power of doing and saying something provocative, not worrying about consequences. You can do it with art. Invisibility is material, ephemeral, that you can hardly keep, but it goes beyond, give you the wings to fly over physical limits. Building a collection is an invisible path, a very personal one, where there are no signs to follow. You can look only inside yourself to continue.
And maybe we could tell the public, tell the listeners, some specific works of the collection. For example, Larissa Buchandam. I think it's a really interesting way to begin and to begin to talk about invisibility in the collection.
Sure. So the first work I'm going to talk about is a work by Lawrence Abu Hamdan. So since 2010, Abu Hamdan has been working on a project titled Oral Contract. This title became an umbrella for a series of events, publication, exhibition, and workshop that examine the contemporary politics of listening and focuses on the role of the voice in law. Throughout the project, he has built up a sound archive containing audio extracts of his works together with specific moments of juridical listening and speaking, gathered from a wide range of sources, such as the trial of Saddam Hussein and Judas Priest, UK police evidence tapes, films such as Decoder, and readings from text, including Italo Calvino's A King Listen. The components of this archive are then mixed together, generating audio documentaries and narrative composition that immerse its audience in the art of a discussion about the relationship of listening to politics, borders, human rights, testimony, truth, and international law. For the exhibition at Casco Utrecht, the Oral Contract Audio Archive is presented as a voice-activated sound installation. Just as the law requires you to speak and vocally testify, so does the Oral Contract Audio Archive. Here, the audience must speak to the archive and voice their desire to listen to its content as the speech recognition software becomes used as a compositional tool. The microphone and headphones that constitute this installation are called the Bosch Ultra Discussion System developed by Bosch Security. TM, so the world leading amplifier and transmitter of testimony. This system is installed in many courtrooms and political forums, including the International Criminal Court in The Hague, the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, and the UN Security Council in New York. The second work I'm going to talk about is a work by the amazing artist Michael E. Smith. And the work is untitled 2018. The work consists of a broken iPhone installed higher up on the wall. Its screen, coated with LSD blotter paper bearing strawberry-shaped icons, emanates a red glow, that result of a laser projected from the ceiling. So actually this work most of the time is invisible for us. You have to think about during daylight, it's impossible to see it. And during daylight, only if we activate the laser, that can also be dangerous for our eye, is visible. So it's a kind of invisible work, actually. So Michael Smith is a very interesting artist because he investigates about putting the object at the center of our reflection, effacing the human presence. So he prepares discarded pieces of apparel like socks, t-shirt and hats, domestic objects like bottles and bowls, part of technical appliances or animal cadavers, and arranges them as though to lay out a forensic of maltreated lives that persist in their material fragments. So Smith's sculpture and picture draw on a frugal repertoire of materials that used to satisfy basic physical needs for food, warmth, or integrity, or served in technical routines of everyday life. He takes them out of use and sets them down in the empty space of his exhibition, where they seek cover in the room or among each other. Dismissed from the social world of which they were once a part, they envelop or support one another or persist in isolation. his most effective pieces are those that engage the relationship between capitalist cycles of consumption and disuse and biological cycles of life and death. But with the knowledge that pondering these themes is an indulgence that many people can't afford, they are the pieces in which the drama and precariousness of existence are kept at bay by a greater urgency, that of maintaining our lives. So I always say that, I mean, the work of Michaelis Smith is a very complex work, very multi-layered. The third work I'm going to present you is a 3D video installation by the artist Ayun Kwon. I'm talking about 489 years. 489 years, this video, talk about the Korean demilitarized zone, called usually DMZ. That is a strip of land which separates North Korea from South Korea. And so we have to pay their attention because the Korean Peninsula is today the only region that remains divided in such a way. In near total isolation for over 60 years, the DMZ has become a natural reserve and a sought-after tourist destination. Though its name suggests otherwise, the area is in fact one of the world's most heavily militarized. This project consists of a transcription of an account of the zone by a former South Korean soldier, Kim. We can access to the DMZ as he immerses us in his personal memories, as if in a tale retold. Kim relates an anecdote from his time there on a reconnaissance mission and shares the stunning discovery that he made in an identified minefield, where explosive had been placed by the South Korean army, but which was not recorded on any maps, so they were kind of invisible. He speaks of a place where man is forbidden to tread and which has been reclaimed by nature. The viewer enters into and discovers this site from a very subjective point of view as they listen to Kim's voice over a narration. Through this project, says Kwon, the artist, I ultimately want to reveal the fantastical nature of this place that can only be reacted and reached through the mind. This piece is an invitation to encounter the memories of a man whose past and present blur with one another, allowing us a less objective but more human access to the DMZ. A fundamentally paradoxical vision where the dignity of nature surpasses an omnipresent lethal danger. The last work I'm going to present you is as well a video by the artist Aslan Gasmov. The video is entitled People of No Consequence. People of No Consequence depicts the first encounter of the Chechens who had survived the deportation, taking place almost 60 years after their repatriation. So we see them in the video entering one by one the empty hall of a public institution, seating themselves row by row in the traditional manner of their communities, men first, women behind. We note their occasional tentative friendly gestures. On the wall at the back of the room, a large poster with a panorama of Grozny depicts the city in its present shape, with all traces of recent wars erased and consequently replaced by a kind of hybrid imaginary architecture. The camera fixed the frame as its central point, thus forcing the viewer to watch the scene directly without changing position. The video continues until the last chair is occupied, with no words expressed, no extra movements taken. The sound remains almost inaudible. The closing text rolls on, factual, dispassionate, and describes the historical circumstances of the meeting. Aslan Gasmov's language is simple, unambiguous, and direct. His humble approach to the history is far from any kind of sensationalism. The silence that formally defines his artistic vocabulary becomes a statement, a form of reenactment of the disregarded history that until now has not found its own articulation. The power of Gasmov's artistic gesture lies in his crafting the circumstances for the artwork, rather than in its transformative features, while the artwork itself functions here as a byproduct, an echo of everything that has happened backstage. Gasmov rejects the hyper-reality of the language of the media. Instead of the gruesome image that we face each day to the point of complete anesthesia, he confronts us with the impassive faces of the trauma survivors. Those silent images, accompanied by the calm, factual narratives of historical events, convey the impossibility of coming to terms with and expressing the pain endured. This is not the silence, actually, Gasmov says. It's a form of renouncing speech. Very powerful. And they are waiting for someone to give them answer.
Yes, I think we can imagine. That was really beautiful, Zvevo. And thank you very much. It was wonderful talking to you. And thank you very much for making your collection visible to us.
Thank you too. And I hope you enjoyed this interview with us.
Artorama Podcast.